Today we'll look at another koan, case number 26 in the Hekigan Roku. Bai Zhang sits on the sublime peak. The case reads, a monk asked Bai Zhang, what's the extraordinary affair? Zhang said, sitting alone on Da Xiong Mountain. The monk bowed. Zhang thereupon hit him. Bai Zhang, whose Japanese name is Hyakujo, lived from 720 to 814 in the Common Era. He was a Dharma heir of Mazu, Japanese Baso, a Dharma grandson of Wei Nung, the sixth patriarch, and a Dharma brother of Nanchuan, Nansen. Bai Zhang was the teacher of Huang Po, or it's Obaku in Japanese, who was the teacher of Lin Ji, Rinzai. Nanchuan was also the teacher of Zhao Zhou, Joshu. So Bai Zhang stands at the heart of our lineage, and he is a direct ancestor of two of the five houses of Chinese Chan. A monk asked Bai Zhang, what's the extraordinary affair? Other translations are, what's the most extraordinary thing? Or, what's the most wonderful thing? As is almost always the case, we are told nothing at all about this monk. And yet I always find myself curious about these anonymous fellows. Who was he? Tall, short, old, young? We don't know. But the nature of the question and the way he puts it might tell us something. How does this monk put it? What is extraordinary? What is wonderful? To me, this does not read like a cry of spiritual angst. That would be more like, what is Buddha? What is it all about? Alive or dead? I have a suspicion that this monk is testing the master. That phrase, what is the most wonderful thing, strikes me as a bit contrived, a test of the old man from one who is or at least considers himself an equal or nearly equal. There is a hint of slyness in this question. I see this monk approaching Bai Zhang at the high seat. He bows and asks with great politeness, ah, teacher, what is this most wonderful, this extraordinary affair? But it is nonetheless a question. The question. What is it? What is this essence that we all seek here in the temple, on our mats, in our lives? Oh, yes, we've all heard the words essential nature, the ground of being, nirvana, etc., ad nauseam. But, of course, all that conceptual stuff doesn't begin to reach it. And the great masters never talked that way. To that question of questions, they said things like, the oak tree in the garden, or 3 pounds of flax, or shit stick. Why? To break us loose, to stop the flow of the mind and open us up to the great reality. And indeed, these powerful short answers strike like a sword to the heart. Does the dog have the Buddha nature or not? No. What can you say to that? What can you think about that? Nothing. Everything ends right there. But Zhang replied, sitting alone on Da Xiong Mountain, not quite the same thing. This is not an answer to cut it all off. This is an invitation. Bai Zhang is throwing the question right back at the monk. To give a katz shout, to strike the ton with a stick, to say the grass is green, the sky blue, that's too easy here. Too easy on the monk. Sitting alone on Da Xiong Mountain. Okay, pal, you've asked your question. Here is my answer. What will you do with it? Now, here again, we come up against issues of translation. Not being a scholar of ancient Chinese, I'm dependent on those English versions that are available. I have to choose one of them. Our version reads, sitting alone on Daiyu Peak, or in Chinese, Da Xiong Peak. This is usually explained by the fact that Bai Zhang had his monastery on Bai Zhang Mountain. Zen masters often took the name of the mountain on which their monastery was located, and Da Xiong was one of the high peaks on this mountain. But a version that I would like to look at a little more closely is different. Katsuki Sekida, in his book Two Zen Classics, translates it as, I sit alone on this great sublime peak. It's not a huge difference, but to me this version is more intimate. It's not that peak over there. I sit alone on this great sublime peak, right here, right now. Mountains are often used as metaphor for practice and realization, for Zazen. Sit like a mountain, we are told. Certainly there is something about mountains. They are high, yet firmly rooted. Heads in the clouds, but at the same time stable, solid, and still. Somehow remote. Dogen writes, because mountains are high and broad, the way of riding the clouds is always reached in the mountains. The inconceivable power of soaring in the wind comes freely from the mountains. If, as Dido Lori has done, one substitutes the word Zazen for mountains, one comes up with, the way of riding the clouds is always reached in Zazen. The inconceivable power of soaring in the wind comes freely from Zazen. In case number 47 in the Denko Roku, the 47th ancestor, Chen Xie, studied with Tan Xia, who asked him, what is your own self prior to the empty eon? The master was about to respond when the ancestor said, you are a little noisy. You should leave here for a while. One day the master climbed Po Yu Peak, and all of a sudden he had realization. Robert Aitken Roshi writes on mountains, "Every temple is a mountain and has a mountain name, even those located in the heart of busy cities. You will see on visiting any Zen monastery in Japan, each monastery has a kaisando, a founder's hall. Kaisan meaning one who opens the mountain." The Chinese poet Han Shan lived alone for many years in a cave on Cold Mountain. His name, Han Shan, means Cold Mountain. He wrote a whole series of poems that are known as the Cold Mountain Poems. Here is one of them. "Men ask the way to Cold Mountain. Cold Mountain, there's no through trail. In summer, ice doesn't melt. The rising sun blurs in swirling fog. How did I make it? My heart's not the same as yours. If your heart were like mine, you'd get it and be right here." No question, here is a soulmate for Bai Zhang. "The great freedom we seek, the unobstructed life in which we ride the clouds, comes from the mountain of Zazen." So is that what Bai Zhang is saying? Climb that mountain. Do Zazen. In that case, why did he not just sit quietly, as did the Buddha when questioned by the Brahmin priest? "I sit alone on this great sublime peak." What is it to be alone? To be truly alone. Being alone is not easy. We are social animals. We evolved not as individuals, but as families, clans, tribes. Most of us have an instinctive fear of being alone for any great length of time. One of the worst punishments that can be inflicted on someone in prison is solitary confinement, the isolation cell, the hole. In a primitive society, being alone is a dangerous thing. There are very large and very hungry animals out there. There are possibly enemy tribes, swamps, snakes, and all sorts of bad things. To be alone is to be banished, cast out from the group, the equivalent of a death sentence. A fear of being caught out there alone is a natural one. Children test their courage by daring one another to go into a dark room alone. Spending a night alone in a haunted house is the standard stuff of horror movies. In this society and culture, it has become increasingly difficult to be alone by oneself. The child who wanders alone or plays by him or herself is looked upon as needing to be cured. A solitary person is either pitied or suspect. Those who live alone are even objects of fear, imagined to be doddering around in an empty house, muttering to themselves. In modern times, even when we are alone in the conventional sense, we are not alone, not anymore. There are pagers, cell phones, iPods, Blackberries, iPhones. No one wants to be out of touch. We are warned against hiking alone, too dangerous. We are afraid to go out alone in certain neighborhoods, unfortunately, with good reason. Safety in numbers. We are caught in a crowd. We are numbers in a computer. We are statistics of Social Security, Nielsen ratings, voter rolls, driver's license records. Nonetheless, spending time alone is seen in all cultures as a purification process. It is the spirit journey, the days and nights of fasting and prayer engaged in by many Native Americans as a rite of passage. In medieval times, part of becoming a knight was a solitary all-night vigil in the church, kneeling in prayer beside one's armor. Who has not dreamed of going off somewhere to be alone? Maybe to a monastery or to some isolated retreat center where we can sit in real, solitary silence with no distractions, no telephones, newspapers, televisions, and so forth. But being truly alone can bring on something that goes beyond the fear of danger or even of death. This is described by many as a kind of awe, a dread of an unknown and unknowable immensity. It is something we are drawn to and at the same time deeply fear. In Sesshin especially, it is this profound aloneness that we eventually must confront in the depths of our zazen. This was pointed out by the Tanto a couple of nights ago. And it is often in Sesshin, deep in the solitary watches of the night, or in the desert wanderings of the saints, when one is alone, when we reach that true aloneness, that such things as Kensho are most likely to happen. Moses wandered in the desert alone. Jesus went into the desert alone. Siddhartha Gautama sat under the Bodhi tree alone. For many, this kind of experience, the terror and love of the unknown and unknowable, is not only unbearable, it is unthinkable. Someone once asked Yasutani Roshi if Zen was for everyone. He replied that it was for everyone who was willing to pay the price. Now that price is far more than just the discomfort, physical and emotional, that one encounters in everyday sitting, and especially in Sesshin. The price asked is the giving up of the self and entering all alone into that unknown infinite. A high price indeed. Now, this may sound like I'm espousing some kind of total nihilistic alienation. Not so. The aloneness that I speak of is not isolation or alienation or loneliness. In point of fact, Bai Zhang was not alone in the conventional sense. He was encountering a monk before an assembly of monks. And yet he was alone. Even as he answers, he shows us sitting alone on the great sublime peak. So this sitting alone is not sitting alone. It is not necessarily going off on retreat and doing zazen in solitary grandeur. The Buddha said, throughout heaven and earth, I am the only one. Well, if he was the only one, whom was he talking to? Why did he bother to say anything? And in fact, he was one of the most public men in history. He was constantly on the move with an entourage of maybe 1,000 monks or more, preaching to anyone who would listen. He met with the lowly, the noble, giving advice, encouragement, and comfort. Was he alone only at those times and seasons when he withdrew? As Keizan describes in the Denko Roku, for 49 years, he did not spend a day alone, but preached the Dharma for the assembly constantly. He was never without a robe and begging bowl. During that time, he preached to the assembly more than 360 times. And yet he said, throughout heaven and earth, I am the only one. Bai Zhang sits alone on the sublime peak. Vimalakirti met with 10,000 Buddhas, Arhats, and Bodhisattvas in his small hut. So how is it that we are always alone? How is it that we are never alone? How do we approach the aloneness of Bai Zhang and the Buddha, which has nothing to do with whether or not one is in a crowd? Master Wu Men, in his verse to case number 16 in the Wu Men Guan, puts it this way. With realization, all things are of one great family. But without it, everything is separate and disconnected. Without realization, all things are as of one great family. With realization, every single thing is different from every other thing. Let's just look at the first and last lines. Then we get, with realization, all things are of one great family. With realization, every single thing is different from every other thing. These two lines are not contradictory. In fact, they can only be said together. Unity can be seen only from the standpoint of differences. Differences can be seen only from the standpoint of unity. They cannot be separate. It is our differences that create our unity. Our unity is the origin of our differences. Maizumi Roshi writes, each of us has a different position, different work, different status, different appearance, and yet each of us is exactly the same in the sense that each of us, as an individual, is the Absolute, is the Buddha Tathagata. Each one of us is alone on the sublime peak. Each one of us walks alone, stands alone, sits alone, eats and sleeps alone. And at the same time, this is not loneliness, but intimacy. Not isolation, but compassion. It is realization of this total aloneness that gives us the freedom to reach out without fear. There's a wonderful story of a Zen master and a prostitute. The Zen master, through some high jinx of his students, found himself in a house of prostitution in a room with a young girl. The girl started to undress, and the Zen master said, "Wait, I'm a priest. I'm afraid I can't sleep with you." The girl became very frightened and said that if he didn't sleep with her, she would be severely punished. So the Zen master said, "Well, your job is to sleep. My job is to sit. Let us both do our jobs. So the girl slept in the bed, and the Zen master sat up all night in Zazen. The Zen master was extraordinarily compassionate in his aloneness and in honoring her aloneness. Zhang said, sitting alone on Da Shong Mountain, the monk bowed. The monk bows. What is a bow? There are all sorts of reasons to bow. What was his? Did he bow out of simple respect? Thank you for your teaching? Or is there something else here? When we bow on entering and leaving the Zendo, is it only out of simple respect? The monk's bow is his role, his ritual or ceremony at that moment. The bow is his aloneness. He too is showing us sitting alone on the sublime peak. Robert Aitken writes about role and ritual. Some people are very suspicious of ceremony, but such suspicion is an unwillingness to invest the self, the worst prison of all. What is more free than the transformation of a Zen teacher to a gardener, of a prisoner to a graduate student? When each act is a rite, each role is sacred. There is nothing to fear, nothing to protect, and self-centeredness has vanished completely. When each act is a rite, each role is sacred. When everything we do, bowing as we enter the Zendo, walking to our place, bowing to the mat, taking our seat, is done as ritual, when we invest and therefore lose ourselves completely in each act as a rite, that role, that universe is sacred. That is when each moment is sitting alone on Da Shong Mountain, the sublime peak. That is our aloneness. This is the function of forms in the Zendo and in the temple. The forms make it easy, or at least easier, to be alone and serene in our role, whatever that may be. The monk bowed. If you truly understand this bow, you yourself sit on Da Shong Mountain along with Bai Zhang, Dogen, and Han Shan. Let us all learn to bow that way. The monk bowed. Zhang thereupon hit him. Yeah, then Bai Zhang strikes him. So many koans end with a blow or a kat shout. What is Bai Zhang about here? Is he chastising the monk? Does he disapprove of the bow? Is his blow the same as the monk's bow, or is it different? There is a time to let it all go. Stop trying to figure stuff out. Stop trying to figure out your life. Forget enlightenment. Let go even of letting go. Now, that doesn't mean we leave the mountain, just that we let go of notions about mountains. Do not be afraid of that aloneness. Go into your practice alone. Go into Mu, the breath, the counting, the sitting. Go into it entirely alone. For even as you are alone, Bai Zhang shares your mat, as does the Buddha, as do all the ancestors and teachers. Each one of us, right now, sits alone on Dasheng Mountain. More than that, each one of us is that mountain, and always have been, and always will be. We sit alone, we walk alone, we eat alone. In commenting on this koan, Dogen says, "In the domain of Buddha ancestors, there is always something extraordinary sitting alone on Dasheng Peak. Being allowed to totally sit is itself an extraordinary thing. Each and every extraordinary activity is simply having rice. Thus, sitting alone on Dasheng Peak is just having rice." Now, in Dogen's way of using words, having rice is not just having rice. Rice is Dharma food. Having rice is having the Dharma, the ultimate truth of things. That is to say, having rice is practice and realization. Each and every extraordinary activity is having rice. Each and every extraordinary activity is practice realization. Anyone can sit down and cross their legs. Anyone can walk, talk, eat, sleep, go to work. These are ordinary activities. It is when and only when activities are practice that they become extraordinary. You can sit forever and remain as you are, or you can sit as your practice and sit with the Buddhas and ancestors on Dasheng Peak. The choice is yours. We are in session to practice, to eat the rice. And to the extent we do so, every action becomes extraordinary. In practice and realization, sitting on our mat becomes the extraordinary thing. Sitting alone on the sublime peak, walking, eating, working, bathing, resting, become the extraordinary activities of the sublime peak. It is only from that sublime peak that we can function, that we can truly act, liberating all beings. And together with all beings, we realize Buddhahood.